Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University and is a licensed chiropractor with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. Allergies. Allergies, asthma, and ear problems, if we can get to them today. Why allergies? Because allergies, and you'll see this in the literature, are being touted as the new epidemic. Everybody's got them at an alarming rate. We have allergies. And I think, my good friends, we're looking at them the wrong way. I don't think we have the perspective. I think we're being fed a lot of hogwash on the issue. But as any parent will tell you, few things are more alarming than when your child ingests a food and goes into anaphylactic shock, meaning some sort of allergic reaction where the windpipe closes. The child has disfigurations on the face, all sorts of horrid-looking rashes, really something out of the Amazing Hulk. And it's so frightening to people, whether it's your children or whether you've been through it yourself. I had a woman the other day ingesting something that night, in the middle of the night, 2, 3 a.m. I think it was a turkey sandwich, if I remember correctly. 3 o'clock in the morning, wakes up, cannot breathe, windpipe is basically shut. She's fighting for her life. On the way to ER, fortunately, she had someone in the house with her. Now, that's how bad it can get. Why? Well, all we're hearing is there are these things called food, and we ingest food, and for some mysterious reason, we just have this crazy immunological response to the food, and that's where it ends. And then it's about anti-inflammatories, you know, from the cortisol and the steroid families as you are rushed to the hospital. This is, of course, when it's acute and when you're in this kind of danger, this is a blessing, correct? Okay, but the cause, nobody's really talking about it. So we're going to get into allergies first. Number one, what is an allergy? Classically speaking, let's just take hay fever or cat dander. This is a great place to start because even 50, 60 years ago, so many people had these things. And it simply means that some substance gets into your blood. That substance we call an antigen. So cat dander is an antigen. Or pollen in the spring that causes all those histaminic responses is another antigen. And whether we inhale them or ingest them, they get into the blood. Once they're in the blood, the claim is that the immune system looks at it and says, you're a foreign particle. You do not deserve to be there. You have no right in this territory. Of course, that's a safety defense mechanism on part of the body, and we accept that. And in a sense, you know, we exalt that. The blood is patrolled by a whole set of immune system cells to make sure that the blood is constantly buffered. The blood is buffered. That means the brain is up there, again, concepts. The brain is up there looking at the blood and making sure that the blood is as it's supposed to be. And the brain controls, through the hypothalamus, a ton of these directives, electrochemical orders, commands, to play around with the chemistry of the blood to keep things, the pH concentration correct, the oxygen CO2 concentrations correct, the amount of antigen or poison in the blood to a certain tolerable level, and so on and so forth. Thousands of things the brain buffers in the blood through the hypothalamus. So the brain sees these antigens in the blood, and the immune system then attacks the antigen. And when these immune system cells go after the antigen, the harmful invader, this brings in a bunch of chemical sequences that usually cause the release of histamine. Histamine is a chemical. It's a pro-inflammatory chemical. And you get all sorts of those nonsense, those not nonsense, but those annoying reactions to cat dander where you're going to swell in the eyes, you're going to tear, you might itch, you might have a rash. If it's a really intense immunological reaction, right, you may disfigure in the face, and worst yet, you may go into some sort of a shock where the windpipe actually starts to close off. Definitely, at least, you're going to have the bronchioles begin to vasoconstrict so you feel like you can't get air. Now, this is the nightmare. And this is an antigenic response, a pro-inflammatory response to an antigen. Now, that I'm going to use today as our reference point. That's our classic allergy. The problem is, these reactions are happening more and more and more and more, and something is sneaking under the rug. So we're having these things to foods now in massive numbers, and we're starting to get away from common sense here, whereby we're not, in a sense, challenging this response by lack of our understanding. Meaning, when you eat a peanut, when you drink a glass of milk, when you go out and, like this particular person, have a turkey sandwich, when you eat in a Chinese restaurant, and you have these types of reactions, somehow we're sweeping him into the same category we did 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, where, yes, we're having an allergic reaction, and we need to go to the antihistamine, or we need to go to whatever suppresses the response, some cortisol derivative. And this is not the way we should be thinking. What we should be understanding is the food we're ingesting or the degree of toxicity in the food or the degree of toxicity in the air or something lacking within our body's ability to mount a harmonious anti-inflammatory response, not an over-the-top one. We're finding defect in all of these arenas. That's the way we ought to be thinking. We have to investigate our physiology, the preparation of the food, understanding and remembering that the food is genetically engineered. If you're eating in restaurants, 9 times out of 10, that food has been tampered within the deepest arena of what we call its makeup. The nucleotide sequences within the chromosomes, within the genes of the food, have been altered. So only God then knows how our immune system, how our divine is going to respond to things like genetically engineered food. And this is being overlooked. This isn't being stressed. This isn't the perspective that's evolving. And this is exactly the problem. The first place medicine should go, and I'd cite allopathic medicine in this instant, is not to allergy injections, is not to vaccines, is not to better drugs to suppress the immune response. This is a nonsense comment. Now, growing up years ago, yes, cat dander, I get it. Pollen in the spring, and we can make arguments as to where the defect is in the individual, but I think we're stretching it a bit. In the springtime, people have allergic reactions. Even they can be varied on many, many levels, and we'll discuss that. But we're starting to push this now into nonsense places, irrational perspectives. And you'll read about this from time to time in all the favorite American magazines as to this alarming, okay, increase in the number of serious allergic reaction. The perspective should be as follows. To understand that genetically engineered food is something our immune systems don't know how to deal with. And righteously and justifiably, the immune system is going to go haywire into a state of panic. Now, what's fascinating to me is to understand that some people, and I brought this up again, and here's a perspective. Some people retain, okay, a deeper, closer connection to the genetics of 200, 300, 500, 1,000 years ago. Some people, I'll say, are more raw, R-A-W. Just a metaphor for whatever the world was 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 years ago, whatever we were doing in the Old Testament. Some people retain a deeper, stronger connection to that. So when you genetically engineer a food like that and you throw it into the bloodstream of somebody who retains much more commemoration with a long time, a long sacred time long ago, their bodies can't handle it. Their bodies understand the depth of the insult. I'm going to tell you they're more sensitized. But of course, this is being understood as a defect. And in this case, and this isn't the only reason people have allergic reactions, but in this case, that is not a defect. That's a strength. John D'Adamo, the man behind Eat Right for Your Blood Type, his son Peter, Eat Right for Your Blood Type. Don't want to get into discussions about this book, controversial book, but I will tell you one thing. The real force behind that book was John, who's 95 years old now. I think he's still in practice in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I hope he's still with us. The point is, he compiled tons of evidence that said the O blood, which no one will argue was the first blood type in Homo sapien, the O blood, is way more likely to have these pro-inflammatory responses because the O blood has the memory that goes further back than anybody. And I would concur. In my clinical experience, it is so often the O blood. So if you're O blood and you have asthma or allergies, please understand, I want you to search yourself. I want you to search and think about your family in Europe, in Asia, in Africa, in South America, in Alaska, in Canada, in America, 200, 300, 400 years ago. And if these people were very connected to the earth, if they were not city dwellers, I don't want to get anyone upset, but if you can sense that they had a connection to the tribe, that they understood themselves as a nomadic tribe. Yes, if you're Mongolian. Yes, many of the Eastern Europeans, the Cossacks, the Welsh, many of the Scottish, the Vikings up in Scandinavia, the Peruvians high in the mountains of South America, many of the Africans and African Americans will relate to the concept of tribe. Tribe in relationship to nature. American Indian, their derivatives. Islanders from the Azores to the Polynesians. If any of this hits you and you're O blood, understand my point. The point is that you retain a deeper, closer connection to when man lived in deep communion with nature, that his livelihood depended on sensing things. And that your whole neurological system, every cell in your body is attuned and demanding to be pet, to be loved, to be nurtured in that same divine grace. And this is where Taco Bell and genetically engineered foods don't cut it. Now, that's not the only reason a person's going to have an intense allergic response to a food. Just the general level of toxicity in the food. If the food is composed, so we'll just take the classic American junk food diet, and we don't have to embellish that. Easily understood. But don't think because you think you eat well, as you're buying your groceries at Ralph's, or inferior, unfertilized, poorly mineralized organic food, that you're exempt from this. Unless the food is radiant, unless the food comes from fertile soil, well water, cultivated with great respect to the ecosystem of the soil, and then, of course, not sprayed, not irradiated in transport. Unless it's kind of that kind of food, you're vulnerable. But the point is here now, moving away from the anthropological perspective on why you have the allergy and your neighbor Harry doesn't. But moving away from that are the toxicity issues. Now, once the antigen, once the toxin, the pesticide in the food gets into your blood, what clears it? What clears it out? What moves it out? How does it get out? 9 times out of 10, it goes out through the bile. And I hope you're thinking what I'm about to say, that unless that liver is clean, unless those bile ducts move. You see, here's a slant on the show. This is show number 34. StraightTalk.cc is the website. You've got 34 shows to listen to. You've got 34 hours covering an enormous variety of topics. But if you've listened to the show, I can use words like biliary patency. And you can start putting concepts together. Get the advantage of that. The advantage of that is you get to think. And if you can start to, via the education, start to think, you can start to put the pieces together. So I can say to you then that if you flush the liver and your biliary flow becomes patent, meaning you see green stuff come out of your body, the clearance time for the antigen will accelerate. The clearance time for the antigen, meaning you get the hay fever, the pollen into your blood, or the cat dander, or the toxin from McDonald's into your blood, and you move it out that much faster, so you greatly reduce the inflammatory response. The longer that garbage stays in your blood, the slower the clearance time, the more damage it's going to do. Look at that. That's piecing together the concepts. Thus the idea behind the school. And speaking of the school, the Medici Institute for Advanced Nutritional Education, the January 8th school is filled. I have about 5 spaces left for the following Sunday, January 15th. I want you to talk to my wonderful manager, Clem Alita, 310-320-1132, 310-320-1132. Buck and a quarter. It's $125. You're there 5, 6, 7 hours. It's education. And then there's all sorts of benefits if I can get you involved. Do that for yourself. The time it takes to heal from injury, the money you spend, I've got a way for you to save it in a far more cost-effective, proactive way that asks you to engage your own sense of responsibility. This is the data, but you've got to go beyond the classic concept of what's my symptom and where's the herb to fix the symptom. You've got to go beyond that. So, 2 concepts. 1, the antigen gets in to your blood. The clearance time based upon patency through the bile ducts. 2, the anthropological perspective on this, that you may be one of those people derived from tribe. And you're all over the globe. Across many, many perspectives. Some people retain more sensibility, and you're going to have a more intense response. Now, 3, what does the body do when that response begins? What happens within the body's reserve system to counterbalance the pro-inflammatory response? How do you come out of anaphylactic shock? How do you get on the other side of that histaminic response? What does your body do? Let's forget the antihistamine. Let's forget the rush to the hospital to get the injection of Benadryl into the body or the steroid. Let's forget that. What does your body do? It makes and supplies its own steroids. The adrenal glands. So when you look at a person and you start to suspect that their adrenals are insufficient, and if I could see all of you listening to this show right now, I know you're all standing up thinking sleep. You're saying to yourself, of course, adrenal insufficiency, not enough cortisol to bring into the anti-inflammatory response, the body's own steroid, the body's own prednisone, the body's own anti-inflammatory, off the adrenal cortex, on the adrenal gland, which sits right on top of your kidney. Do you have it? Where are your adrenals at? And of course, we'd go to sleep. We go to vitamin B6. We go to vitamin C. In a few minutes, we'll discuss the herbs we might use. What adrenals were you born with? Why do you get the allergic response and not your friend? Well, maybe your friend's adrenals are bigger. Maybe they're stronger. Thick neck, big jaw, athletic type. Means big adrenals. Are you the kind of person that just goes without sleep and it doesn't bother you? Are you the kind of person that feels like you can eat anything and you're just fine? Are you the kind of person that doesn't know when you're tired? Do you have people or members of the family that just work and work and work and then one day they're dead because the signals don't go off, because every stress to their body is overridden by this powerful plush injection of cortisol from their own body into the blood and they don't feel anything? The proverbial pit bull. Do you know a little story about the pit bull? When the pit bull bites, once it sinks its arms, once it puts its teeth into your arm, nothing stops it. It doesn't feel pain. It doesn't know. You can do whatever you want to stop it. Once it's sunk its jaws, its teeth into your bones, the animal doesn't stop. What allows an attack like that? Massive adrenal glands. And when we study the pit bull and the adrenal glands are 3 to 4 times bigger than they're supposed to be. There are people running around like this. And then there are people running around without that much adrenal support. They weren't born with strong adrenals. A lot of times, as we say, the neck is thick and the jaw is big. If the neck is thin and the jaw is small, receded, just not there, the adrenals tend to be a little bit weaker. And these are the people that must get their sleep. And these are the people that must get their nutrition. And if any one of these is you, you have to think about pampering your body a little more, but don't feel bad. Because the first people to drop dead out of nowhere at 50 or 60 years old are the people with these big adrenals, because they don't take care of themselves. Because they don't have to until it's too late. It all balances out. So just respect yourself. So in this case, then, let me say that the adrenaline response, the cortisol response, is the third factor to what we call the allergy. Was the kid breastfed? Why breastfeeding? Well, breastfeeding lays down the fundamental ecosystem that grows into a good, strong, probiotic family in the intestines. And what do those probiotics do from the small, not just the large intestine? You've got a massive ecosystem of bacteria in the small intestine. And what do those little chiggers do when you ingest these foods? They begin to what? Digest them. So when you get a food into the body that would otherwise inflame the tissue, and we'll get to the meaning of that in a second, as it relates to what? To the allergic response. if you've been breastfed or if you've developed the probiotic ecosystem in the small intestine, even more in this case than the large intestine, you will begin to digest the food. You have billions upon billions of allies in the digestive process, without which the burden's on you and your bile and your pancreatic enzyme and your HCL. And if you're a little shy in that department for a multitude of reasons we don't need to discuss today, but if your physiological system cannot handle the food, even an okay food, I mean, lots of you can put down the garbage in that greasy restaurant. Lots of you can put down the garbage in McDonald's. You've all had it at one time or the other, and lots of you can do it. And it can be that you've got this massive ecosystem because you were breastfed or you developed it in some way, shape, or form down there in your gut lining, and it can handle the garbage. That's what the probiotics do. It's an extra system. Now look at that. The adrenals, the liver flush, the probiotics, your own particular medical anthropology. This is medicine, my friends. This is the way we need to think about it. But that's not what you read in Time Magazine or Newsweek last year. You read about the sensational increase in the number of children in anaphylactic shock and what the modern drugs are about to do for it. This is the nonsense. Although, in an acute situation, when your windpipe is shutting down, it's not time to think about these concepts, is it? It's time to get to the hospital and enjoy the benefits of acute medical care. So it all balances out. Everybody's got their place. And if everybody could just respect their place, we wouldn't have such an imbalanced system. Someone was complaining to me yesterday about the lack of care in allopathic medicine, the medical doctors. And I said to this very fine woman, I said, yeah, but you got to understand, the public has put medical doctors in a place they don't belong. Their educations are for acute medical care. So why walk in with some chronic inflammatory situation that they never got any education in? And then ask them to come up with answers. See, there's another side to it. Allopathic medicine doesn't study this way. It doesn't think this way. Holistic medicine does. But then holistic medicine tends to go off the deep end, and it doesn't respect hard science. And so the two can't meet. They don't shake hands. Allopathy looks at holistic medicine making claims that are sometimes nonsensical. The purpose of this show is to bridge the gap. And vice versa. Allopathic medicine just doesn't want to stretch beyond its paradigm until it's been repeated to them for 50 to 100 years. How else did we understand in the 60s that there was no relationship between lung disease and smoking cigarettes? I mean, that was the prevalent wisdom in the 60s. We had medical doctors backed by the AMA endorsing cigarette smoke. How can one do that? Well, it's the other side of that problem then. Science has to loosen up a little bit. Trust its intuitive gut. You got to throw it out there onto the table. Observe the clinical response. Don't just wait 50 to 100 years until politics and egos subside and you end up simply being 100 years behind the times. My God. Did it take a rocket scientist in 1960 to know that smoking cigarettes was dangerous? Right now, in Mexico City, purported to have at least 50 to 60 times the degree of pollution of L.A. on a bad day. Epidemiologists down there are just starting to suspect that the much higher incidence of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease down there could be related to the air. But further studies need to be done. I'll throw one on top of that. Why do further studies need to be done? Why do you always hear? So let me just deviate for a minute and we'll get right back to the stream. But catch this. Why do further studies always need to be done once we suspect something like cigarettes cause cancer and it's 1960? And the same medical doctor that you're talking to might be the guy that backed the ad to smoke Lucky or Camel? Why did further studies need to be done, even though many suspected? Because for every person that smokes that gets cancer, there's 1 to 2 to 5 to 10 that don't. And if you haven't worked out the mechanism, then you're at a loss to say exactly why, even when it does occur. But here's the flush. Here's the real issue about why further studies need to be done. Because from the time you are stressed, like bad air, or Taco Bell level food, or cigarette smoke, by the time you're stressed to the time you produce the disease or the symptom, there are 10 to 15 to 20 to 30 to maybe 100 other physiological issues that need to be playing or not playing in the game before you express the symptom. I'll say it again, because that's a mouthful. But let me stretch your mind even on Christmas Eve today to give you a sense of reality. Before, from the time you stress the system, from the time that antigen, from that food, from ground hoof and tail of a genetically engineered animal served in McDonald's or Taco Bell that we ingest because we're late for work and we have low blood sugar and we just got to get some food in our stomach and there's an In-N-Out burger right there. From the time that toxin gets into your blood to the time you get the symptom, there are at least dozens of other physiological entities, systems, buffer systems, reserve systems, that will allow that symptom to express or suppress. We just went through four of them. The adrenals, the liver flushing, the probiotics, your connection to your medical anthropology. And there's way more than that. And you can apply that to the pathogenetic considerations for every single symptom or disease. And if this is not put in to the study, if this isn't understood as such, then we're going to have this very myopic sense of things, this very short-sighted sense of things, until things get so imbalanced, meaning the air gets so bad, or the amount of carcinogen in the body, its exposure gets so high that we just have to sit down and say, well, look, we don't understand it, but everyone that smokes gets cancer, or everyone that lives in Mexico City, 10 times the normal population, has some sort of allergy issue or asthma issue. Until we see that very myopic thing, gross visible response, until we see that, it might be 10 to 20 to 50 years before we put it together. Listen to that on the website, straighttalk.cc. I know that's a mouthful, but it's a higher-end concept. Okay, now, one of the great clinchers for why people have allergic responses to food. One of the great clinchers is sympathetic dominance. So however many people are listening to this show today, I know that at least half of you know what sympathetic dominance is. I can freely use that word and move on to other concepts, can't I? And if you're new to the show, sympathetic dominance simply means that the speed up system coming off your spinal cord through your nerves, controlling organ function, is so wound up, is so high speed chase, that mayhem ensues. So let me be a little more specific. In your small intestine are these suction cups. They're called intestinal villi. V-I-L-L-I, villi. Little fingers, little suction cups. And once the HCl and the bile and the probiotics and the pancreatic enzymes, amylase, protease, lipase, once the enzymes coming off the small intestine, once all these chemicals digest the food into its nice liquid form, these little fingers on the inside of the small intestine called villi suck up the food. They suck it up. They imbibe it. They breathe it in. And if we shrink ourselves down to villi size and we get in the little boat down inside the small intestine and we look at these great big villi sucking up the food, they're going to look happy or they're going to look sad. They're going to look relaxed or they're going to look worried. They're going to be doing a nice melodious dance and singing, or they're going to be freaking out when you are sympathetic dominant, when your thoughts or your stress levels from the time you were a baby, even starting in utero, on to your teenage years, into your 20s and 30s, after the kids, the one child, the two, the three, the five kids, after the cesareans, after the episiotomies, after this, that, and the other thing, after life has just looked like, wow, where did it all go and now I'm 50? Or maybe it started with you at 20. Once you get hit with enough stress, those little intestinal villi, they're in a frenzy. And they can't really work correctly. And the food that they're supposed to suck up, imbibe, starts to create an inflammatory response. Because the villi just don't work right. The chemical organization behind the passage of food, the diffusion of food from the small intestine through the villi into the body, that process is greatly hampered by a chaotic intestinal villi. The dance is no longer fluid. So the villi begin to inflame. There's that word. A pro-inflammatory response, because the villi, the intestinal villi, don't dance on our, and are essentially paralyzed as you have lived in sympathetic dominance far too long. Indeed. And what happens? Well, what happens is food doesn't get digested then, meaning assimilated. So you don't take the food and the food rots, or you take the food in larger pieces than you're supposed to take it. Now, that can be compounded by infection inflaming the villi. We call that leaky gut. Now we have a word to use, leaky gut. Powerful word. Your gut is leaking. I mean, it's got all that emotive aspect to it. But it just means, usually, for more than any other reason but stress, it just means that the villi are so inflamed that larger molecules of food are passed through the small intestine and into the bloodstream. And so the immune system sees it, and this whole pro-inflammatory response begins once again. So look at that. The antigenic response, controlled by the quality of the food, genetically engineered, toxic or not, your emotional makeup, the medical anthropology, are you sympathetic dominant? Can your liver remove it as rapidly as it needs to? Are there infections creating inflammation in the villi so that even somebody balanced, sympathetic, parasympathetic balance, autonomic balance, even with leaky gut, then could it be infectious in origin? To the probiotic response, have you had lots of antibiotic? Do you know how many people go into years of allergies and it ends up being that illness that they had or that trip to the hospital they had and they were just on IV antibiotics for one straight month? Dozens of cases like this. If you've had long-term antibiotic exposure, if you've had the misfortune of being in the hospital and with serious infection that required IV support, IV antibiotics, if they've used one of those experimental antibiotics, those super powerful ones that you didn't really know the name of, but they had to do it because there was no choice, and maybe there was no choice, but you can be assured that your probiotics in the gut have been decimated. And what does that mean then to an allergic response? It means you're going to have one. So next year, your hay fever's out of control. All of a sudden, you can't digest strawberries or peanuts. Isn't that fascinating? Don't you see how the body weaves itself together? Multiple variables determining the expression or the suppression of a symptom. This is Sherlock Holmes. This is Monopoly. This is banking. This is the reality of trying to get people out of a hole. And this is your chance to understand it. Now, I'm starting the Medici Library. I've got a beautiful homepage to the Medici Library. And you're going to go on the website, straighttalk.cc, and you're going to start to get hooked into the works of art. I mean literature as art, giving you the essences, the perspectives, straight to the punch. And those of you that are in the school will get access to the library in extra special ways, because I want you in the school. I want to see your face. I want to know your name. I want to see where you're not precise in your perception or how you approach your health. And I want you to relax behind your symptoms and understand that you'll dig your way out educationally. I want to get you off this thought that you're going to find that special magic potion to relieve you of your symptoms. That's where America needs to go, because frankly, I don't think America can afford any other perception. Americans today have to understand how to spend their money, because there's not enough money to be wasted. Not that there ever was. And the only way you spend your money intelligently on your auto mechanic, on your accountant, on the furniture you buy, and on the herbs and medical care you buy is by getting educated. Now, you can afford to slip up maybe with your car. You can't afford to slip up with your health. So come to my school. It's my solution. If you have to do a one-on-one, you know the number. But in groups is power, because you're all connected to each other. And you have to understand that, or you get lost in your own little dome of illness. You think you're alone there. And there's lots of people that are thinking the same way as you are. This is a medium for you to understand that. And the library, once perfected over the next few months, will top it off. Asthma. Let's get to asthma. Why do I put asthma after allergies? So today is allergies, asthma, and ear problems. I don't know if we're going to get to ear problems. Ear, hearing, sight. Might have to do separately. Let's hope we can. Why asthma? Because asthma isn't often just a response in the lung to an allergic reaction. So we say someone has asthma because there's some sort of antigenic pro-inflammatory response that causes vasoconstriction of the bronchioles. So when you breathe air in, it goes through your nose, and you should nose breathe, not mouth breathe. When you mouth breathe, you don't pet, P-E-T, you don't massage the dural tissue of the brain when you breathe through the mouth. So if your septum's deviated, we got problems right away. If you can't get air through the nose, my God, I could do a whole half show on that by itself. But once the air is through the nose, it begins to vibrate the dural tissue and the autonomic nervous system goes into balance. Through the nose, through the crystagala of the ethmoid bone, to the sphenoid, and all the bones of the skull begin to dance. Yes, they do. They are not static joints. They are moving joints, the sutures between all the cranial bones. No arguments there. And once this air is through the nose and it dances the cranial system to a higher level of precision as it sends orders and commands to every cell in your body as the autonomics balance. I hope your heads are not hurting today. I hope you're saying, man, I can get this. And I hope you're using the website. As the air goes through the nose, if your septum's deviated, if you can't get it through the nose, get your nose fixed. Figure that problem out. Mouth breathing is dangerous. You bet it is. It's dangerous. It denies you a vital, vital physiological asset. And that is the pathway through which we balance the autonomic nervous system through breath. Okay, so we get that air through the nose, and it goes down through the oropharynx. It's in the throat. It goes into the trachea. And the trachea divide into the bronchus. And the bronchus divide into the bronchioles. And the bronchioles, in the end, puff out into the alveoli. And that's really what the lung is. It's a bunch of bronchioles, tiny little passageways that bubble out into the alveolus. And in the alveoli, we exchange oxygen and carbon dioxide. Done. These bronchioles, when you have an allergic attack, constrict. And if they constrict, you can't get air. And then your body goes into panic. Now, there's two ways of understanding this response. The two ways to understand this response have to do with the lung and the large intestine. And they have to do with the adrenal gland, adrenal kidney axis, and the lung. So both involve the lung, obviously, because that's where the bronchioles constrict. But the difference between the two is, in one sense, we talk about lung and large intestine and their relationship. In another sense, we talk about kidney, adrenal, and the lung. So let's talk about lung and large intestine. Now, here's a concept. Go figure it out. I'm not going to. I just observe it. And that is that the lung is a dumping ground for mucus from the large intestine. Go figure that. Somewhere in embryology, we could get this answer. But I have not had time to study this, really. Embryology is fascinating because it explains all these funny little hookups in the body. You know, like your big toe or something is connected to your urinary bladder. Things like this. Somehow, perhaps in an embryological perspective, but definitely in a clinical one, we observe this to be true. That if the large intestine overflows with grease and sludge, the lung fills up. You know this. You know this. It's all common sense in the end. So is science. If you're constipated, didn't you ever have that meal? You might over the holidays now, right? That meal that just had too much garbage in it, too much sugar, too much cake, too much this, that, and the other thing. You know? Who cares? It's the holidays, right? Once a year we have Christmas. So you're going to indulge. And it's a cold, windy, maybe damp, rainy day. Those of you listening in the Northeast, you can relate. And that next day, you just about feel it in the lung when you get up. And you pray for that large bowel movement. You hope you didn't constipate yourself. And then you have that massive event, hopefully. Now, you know what I'm talking about. You stand up and you can breathe through your chest again. There. You understand what I'm talking about. I know you do. The lung is connected to the large intestine. Now, suppose you don't poop. Suppose you're chronically constipated. Suppose the gut ecology in your large intestine is just really poor. Suppose you've just been eating the kind of garbage that plugs you up. Suppose it's a cold, damp, dark, and rainy winter. Up in Seattle, in the Northeast, wherever. Suppose you don't have good heating system in that new apartment or house you bought. Suppose your heating system broke down. Suppose you were out fixing the car on the front lawn for 12 hours to save a little money, and you spent twice as much money, so you weren't happy about that, and it was raining on your chest and back. And because you were so stressed, you just went to In-N-Out Burger that night. And because you had that urge for ice cream, you sucked down a chocolate shake. And then you went potso and threw a Coke in. And then the next morning, you didn't get that bowel movement. What happens? The lungs fill up with pus and mucus. So let's take that little kid, that little pristine child. And let's have one born with a very strong connection to the earth as it once was. and let's not breastfeed it, and let's bear it C-sec, and then let's feed it garbage. Kids sometimes at 2 or 3, and the mom's got the plastic cup there, and it's got a straw in it, and it's just drinking soda all day long, or juice. I love that one. I don't give my kids soda. I give it apple juice because that's healthy. You need education if you're thinking that way. So that kid's taking down all these things that make mucus. And what's going to happen to that kid by the time it's 4, 5, 6 years old? I'll tell you what, it's going to have asthma. And if that kid just happens to be born with not quite the adrenal gland you want, or if that kid's cord was wrapped around its neck, or labor was 30 hours, or an emergency C-sec was performed, or it was breached and had to be turned, or it was premature, or it was late, or the birth wasn't anything but 20 minutes and back to work for mom, because that's how healthy the whole thing was. Or if that kid wasn't loved by the father and the mother during gestation, or if the mother simply had thoughts about how am I going to handle this kid? I really didn't want it. Even though I love it, I didn't plan on number 4. I'm tapped out. How am I going to do this? Yeah, the little baby doesn't pick up on that. You bet it does. So add all these factors together and ask yourself why a kid would have asthma. Again, peel the onion. Again, understand the thought process. Again, pull out one by one by one, like Sherlock Holmes in a mystery movie, one by one by one. Take out the stressors one by one by one. And don't take out fats. Not fats, raw fats. Lubricate the lung. The lung loves moisture. I didn't say dampness, I said moisture. There's a balance. Dry lung is one cough. A dry lung cough. No essential fatty acids, no vitamin D, no production of surfactant in the alveolus to keep it smooth. And you're going to have dry lung. Tons of dairy, tons of wheat, tons of sugar, lots of constipation, poor probiotics in the gut, and you're going to have tons of mucus on a cold, dark, damp, and dreary winter with no vitamin D to top. You're going to have a lot of mucus. Either way, you're going to have a bad lung. But the intestine, the large intestine, very connected to this issue. Now let me throw another one in terms of asthma. Kidney adrenal. You already know it because I already said it. If the adrenals are strong, no matter what garbage you put into your body, no matter how much mucus starts to vasoconstrict that lung, no matter what stressful event from the cord around your neck to parents' divorce and the child's too and grows up hearing lots of terrible fights, when those adrenal glands are there, when they're big, when they're strong, no matter what that kid gets hit with, the adrenal cortex squeezes, tons of cortisol comes out, and you have the most powerful boost, not the man-made one, the God-made boost of anti-inflammatory support you could ever have. Thousands of times stronger than any herb, in much larger quantities, more effective than anything. Forget the plants when you have strong adrenal glands. And what happens then? That tendency to vasoconstrict through the bronchioles is countered by the cortisol. So if you're born that way, you got a big advantage. Now here's the point. When the body's in sympathetic dominance from the time the child's very, very young, it's going to go into vasoconstriction more easily. It's going to go into the panic mode. In panic, the sympathetic nervous system dominates, and you'll vasoconstrict. So the relaxation of the bronchioles and the parasympathetic integrity of the nervous system, when it's too effectively countered, overruled by the stress response, you're going to go into the asthmatic attack more easily from emotional stress. And it starts in the womb and then it continues. Great little story if we have time here. Treated a woman years ago, very healthy young woman, had a bad day with her dad one day. An argument ensued. She was only 12 years old. The father got a little physical with the daughter. He was scared that she was going to start hanging out with gangs. So he got a little bit physical. And the mother came to the daughter's aid, and the father took that as a massive insult to his role as the patriarch. And then things got a little more physical, and the mother, arguing on behalf of the daughter and how to rear the child, called the police on the father. This was the last straw. Father left the house. Cops came. As often, you know, they were useless. They didn't do a thing. They didn't help. Father came back later with a gun, drunk, out of his mind, and started shooting at the door with a revolver. So the mother and the daughter spent the entire night underneath the bed. The neighbors didn't hear it or didn't call, just shooting through the door, screaming and cursing. The next week, that child had asthma. And I met that child when she was in her upper 20s. And she had bad asthma. And she had to cleanse, and she had to stretch, and she had to build herself, her hormonal system, her adrenal lung axis. She had to balance her nervous system with all the therapies we gave her. And then one day I was there when she collapsed on the floor in a massive seizure, reliving the incident with her father. And shortly thereafter, the asthma started to heal. Story, huh? There's a Christmas story, and not a depressing one to me, because there's God in that story. And that's what it's all about, finding God in your body, exalting the systems you were given, and using your brains and your quest for knowledge to understand who you are. Okay, we're not going to get to ear problems. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. The school, take my advice. 320-1132, area code 310. Call Clem Melita for the school. Hear the show again. You're going to need to. StraightTalk.cc. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. God bless you.
Been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part, you can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.